The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Talk more about the cover theme from Our State, which this month is the seafood issue. And what better place to start than shrimp and grit? Not grits, grit. Along North Carolina's ever-changing coast, shrimp trawlers remain a constant on the ocean, the rivers, the sounds, thanks to resourceful captains who faced challenging headwinds with determination. Want to know how they do it? Come aboard. And this is written by Karen Langley Martin. Nice picture of a shrimp trawler out here on the double spread. It looks like it might be early morning. The seagulls are all hanging around, hoping for a little handout. And there's a couple of men in the back. The nets are out of the water, so they're either just arrived or they're about to leave or maybe move to a new spot. The caption says, at sunset, well, that answers that question, on the New River, hopeful seagulls know that the best place to be is within swooping distance of the skimmer trawl Faith and Hope, headed home to Steed's Ferry with a haul of tasty shrimp. You can't bring a banana on a boat. What? The woman in a rubber boots pauses on the dock, confused. The captain, Tommy Jarman, points to the jacket tied around her waist. Isn't that a banana you've got down there? She looks down. Oh, yes, why? Bananas are bad luck on a boat, Jarman explains. A lot of captains wouldn't let you on their boat with that. He smiles and offers her a hand to step aboard. Good thing I'm not superstitious. The last thing Jarman needs this evening is bad luck. He's taking guests out on the New River for a shrimping trip and keeping his fingers crossed that they'll actually get to catch some shrimp. The last couple of years, shrimping hasn't been good, and his nets have often come up empty. The banana bothers him a little, but Jarman is more than a shrimper and a boat captain. He's also a tour guide and small business owner who understands customer service. So he lets the banana aboard. 25 years ago, Jarman was jammed inside an 8-by-8-foot closet, his eyes burning from paint fumes. He was 29, working as a contractor in Jacksonville and hating every minute of it. I spent hours painting inside those closets with no windows, he says. After one closet too many, Jarman quit. He bought a small shrimp boat and moved to Steed's Ferry, a fishing village across the river from Camp Lejeune. Shrimping is hard work, but for Jarman, it was a dream come true to be on the water every day, feeling the wind and sun. I just went head over heels for fishing, he says. I kept going a little deeper, a little deeper. I bought a boat, then I bought a bigger boat. My father's been a fisherman all his life. I guess you could say it's in my blood. The shrimping scene has changed a lot since Jarman started in the 90s. He used to earn $40,000 to $50,000 a year selling the shrimp he caught. Now we're lucky to do $10,000, he says. It's almost not worth it anymore. Environmental changes, competition, and international markets and stricter regulations on commercial fishing are some of the factors that Jarman says have made things more difficult. Last year's high fuel prices made it even worse. There were some days when Jarman didn't even bother taking the boat out. He would have lost money just leaving the dock. If I didn't have another source of income, I would have to let this boat go, he says. I just do it because I like it. I fill our freezer and fill my parents' freezer. When people pay to go out on a shrimp boat, they expect to actually see some shrimp. So even though the past year or two or three have not been great for shrimping, Jarman is hoping that he can give his guests a good experience today. As his boat eases out of the harbor, Jarman hustles back and forth between the helm and the hydraulics levers. It's windy, so he's decided to lower the nets right away. Normally, he waits until they're in deeper water and ready to start trawling. But if the wind is blowing more than 10 knots, they act like sails and will turn the boat over on its side, Jarman says. I had that happen years ago and learned a valuable lesson. Jarman's mate, Danny Wells, stands at the back of the boat, untangling any snags that he sees as the nets slowly lower from 32 feet in the air to hover just above the water. They putter along at 5 knots, half the speed they'd be able to go to if the nets were up. Jarman's passengers take photos from the railings of the boat. The sky is Carolina blue. Wispy clouds grow in the late day sun. A flock of gulls follows the boat. Everything on board is ready for a haul of shrimp, if they get lucky. 10 large coolers wait, holding a couple of 100 pounds of ice. A miniature clothesline hangs taut with wooden clothespins, displaying 5 clean pairs of gloves. If there are shrimp to sort, the gloves will keep the stink off people's hands and protect them from the sharp points that are on the heads and tails. A clean white fiberglass table takes up most of the space on the boat. Empty, but hopefully not for long. Once they're safely on the river and the nets are in position, Jarman starts chatting with passengers, answering questions and telling stories. People who join him for shrimping trips range from experienced anglers to novices who have never been on a boat in their lives. Many assume that a shrimp trawler drags the nets through the water, scooping up shrimp as it goes. But shrimp hang out in the sand and mud at the bottom of rivers and oceans where coral, rocks, and other debris would tear the nets. So instead, Jarman shows his passengers how the nets are attached to steel frames that keep them off the rough bottom, protecting them, usually, from getting snagged. The one time his nets got caught, it took him 2 hours and 30 dives down into the murky water to cut them free, and then $3,000 to replace them. Jarman's boat is a skimmer trawl, the only kind permitted in the section of New River where he's headed this evening. In North Carolina, skimmers are commonly used to shrimp on inside waters like bays and rivers. If you see a shrimp boat in the ocean, it's most likely an otter trawler, dragging its net behind with a steel cable. 2 large wooden doors hold the net open, with the bottom of the net stirring up a few inches of the seabed and the shrimp along with it. On skimmer trawls, like Jarman's, the nets are attached to frames and drop off the sides of the boat. A tickler chain runs along the bottom edge of the frame and bumps along the bottom of the river, startling shrimp out of the muck and up into the nets, which are spread wide and move against the current. White shrimp, which is what Jarman is after today, jump above the surface of the water, which turns out to be a convenient way to know if you've dropped your nets in a good spot. Brown shrimp don't jump like that, Jarman says. With brown shrimp, we don't know if they're catching anything till we pull up the nets. At exactly 5 p.m., the hour that the North Carolina Division of Marine Fisheries has set as the start time for Sunday shrimping this year, Jarman pushes down on the hydraulics lever, and the nets drop into the water. As if a silence signal has gone out, seagulls, which have been quiet until now, begin screeching and swooping. the flock triples in size. Gulls dive bomb the nets from all angles. Shrimp are popping out of the water on both sides of the boat. Now Jarman needs to convert his passengers into crew. He hands everyone a pair of gloves. He gives one person a red plastic dustpan to scoop shrimp off the table and dump them into the red plastic buckets that Wells is placing on the deck by the table. Another guest gets a pair of tongs, the kind you'd use to scoop up a hot potato at the dinner table. Jarman eases up on the lever to raise the nets, and they erupt from the river, each bulging with a dripping, wriggling mass of shrimp. Wells unties the rope cinching the bottom of the nets, and whoosh, a teeming load of sea life rushes onto the table. Thousands of grayish-white shrimp flip and hop on the table, mixed in with the inevitable bycatch, untended victims of the shrimp's nets, a brilliant white and yellow pompano, a shimmering lavender look-down fish, and blue crabs with red-tipped pinchers. The flurry of activity on the table demands action, and it's all hands on deck. Banana Lady uses the dustpan to scoop shrimp with one hand, and, taking a cue from Wells and Jarman, uses the other hand to pick up the bycatch and toss it back into the river. The gulls are shrieking, feasting. The passengers with tongs gingerly clamps the crab shells and deposits them into their own basket. Crabs aren't worth selling in North Carolina this time of year, but they'll make good eating. 7 hectic minutes later, it's all over. Jarman and Wells dump 14 baskets of shrimp into the coolers and top them with a layer of ice. That's about 700 pounds, Jarman reports. Shrimp are priced by size, and his buyers will want to know how big they are. These are 20 count, he estimates, meaning 20 shrimp per pound. The lower the number, the bigger the shrimp. These are a good size. Anything over 40 is very hard to sell. Already, just an hour after leaving the dock, they've caught more shrimp than on many of Jarman's entire trips last year. They drop the nets twice more, and both times haul up hundreds of pounds of shrimp. Jarman's limit of what he and Wells can handle back at the dock is 2,000 pounds. So, after they hit that in 3 drops, they start back. The wind has died down, so Jarman can raise the nets for a faster trip home. The nets drip water as they rise, and a few stray shrimp dangle in the netting. The clouds turn orange and pink and plum as Faith and Hope heads back, riding a ton heavier in the water than when it left. This is Jarman's best haul in 2 or 3 years. As always, he shares the catch with his guests. Back at the dock, everyone fetches coolers from their cars, and Jarman fills them with shrimp and ice. For those who need it, he offers simple instructions on how to prepare the shrimp at home. Pop the heads off first, like this, then use a plastic tool you can get for a couple of bucks from Ace Hardware and zip that top vein out. Freeze them in water in plastic containers, not Ziploc bags, or the sharp part of the tail might poke through the bag. A woman slides her cooler full of shrimp into the back of her minivan and turns around. She reaches into her pocket and hands Jarman the banana she never got around to eating. Here, she says, you can have this. Maybe. It's good luck. If you're interested in real livin' fishing charters, they're on Gulf Drive at Sneed's Ferry. You can find them on Facebook as Real Livin' Fishing Charters. And now we're going to read about Fresh Fried and Riverside. On the banks of the New River in Sneed's Ferry, 4 generations of the same family have been frying shrimp and baking pies 7 days a week since 1946. Written by Karen Langley Martin. There's a picture here of a restaurant and some of the food, and the caption says, just feet from the New River, River View Cafe serves seafood platters piled high with fried shrimp, scallops, and oysters, plus hush puppies, slaw, and fried squash. Bill West and two fellow Marines crept down to the water's edge. They untied a rowboat and slipped into the bay. Pulling rank, West told his companions to row while he watched the shore. Had they been spotted? The boat sliced through the choppy waves in the inlet where the bay opened into the river. West watched the military camp outbuildings grow smaller. Then he turned and looked to the other side of the river, where lights glimmered on the water, beckoning. His shoulders relaxed. He'd made it again. The destination? Riverview Cafe in Sneed's Ferry. The departure point? Camp Lejeune, a Marine Corps base most definitely not in the business of lending rowboats to its recruits. Kimberly West heard her late father tell the story a thousand times. He and his buddies would commandeer, we won't say steal, a boat and cross Courthouse Bay to get seafood and beer at Riverview Cafe. Her mother, Sophia, Bill's wife of 52 years and a lifelong Wilmington resident, acknowledges that their hometown has plenty of good seafood. But Bill just fell in love with Riverview. We always went for special occasions. Anytime we had visitors, we had to take them there, and they had to hear the story. Stories have been made, told, and retold at Riverview Cafe for generations, and owner Johnny Terwillinger has been around for most of them. His grandfather, Jimmy Lewis, started the place in 1946, and by the time Terwilliger was in sixth grader at Dixon Elementary, he had a part-time job washing dishes. He bought the business from his uncle in 1987 when he was just 23 years old. He had no formal business training, but he'd been watching his family long enough to know the recipe for success. Make good food, keep it affordable, and greet people by name. I have customers who have been coming here since 1946, Terwilliger says. It's like family here. A server named Mary Ann Everingham chimes in, a plate of steaming hush puppies in hand. I've waited on older people who tell me they remember coming here and sitting on a high chair. For Terwilliger, most of the menu items have family memories attached to them. Fried oysters, pulled from Stump Sound and cooked the way his granddaddy did it in 1946. Key lime pie, baked today by Melissa Hunter, whom Terwilliger's mother taught how to make a perfect meringue. Chowders and gumbos, made from scratch daily. Terwilliger is especially proud of the weekday lunch special. It comes with meat, two veggies, rolls or hush puppies, tea and dessert, all home-cooked, changes every day, he says. We call it the local plate. Whether it's a weekday or a weekend, be sure to get there early. The colored greens always sell out. Pause near the pie case to read the handwritten menu from an era when you could order a fish dinner for a dollar. Ask Everingham for a table in the back by the windows where you can look across the New River to Camp Lejeune and try to imagine how much trouble Bill West would have gotten into if he'd been caught commandeering that rowboat. Before you know it, you'll be telling your own stories over a hot plate of hush puppies. Riverview Cafe is on Hall Point Road in Sneed's Ferry. They're on Facebook at Riverview Cafe 1946. And now, the state of seafood. In North Carolina, it's easy to find our favorite preparations of seafood, cooked in a stew, fried up calabash style, served on the half shell. Just head to the coast. There's a picture of three cooked crabs lined up in a row here on some kind of a slate. And then there's a pair of heavy-duty gloves holding some oysters. It says, for a caption, whether it's oysters from Wilmington, crabs from Washington, or one of the many other seafood delicacies from our coast, what you're tasting is more than just the sea. It's pure North Carolina. Welcome to Calabash. In southern Brunswick County, a handful of families turned their town into a whole household name and their restaurants into destinations. They built a legacy on local seafood, lightly breaded and perfectly fried. Written and illustrated by Emily Wallace. The town of Calabash doesn't need to announce itself. It's known near and far for its lightly battered seafood, what folks know as Calabash style. Still, a wooden sign welcomes travelers to the seafood capital, a claim spelled out in simple script below a painting of a trawler. A little farther down the road, Beck's restaurant adds emphasis. "This is it," is written across a red arrow that protrudes from its sign. Before it was sold in 2017, a similar red arrow pointed down at Coleman's original with "This is it," pronounced in all caps. And now we have some little short sections here which discuss the various restaurant. And speaking of Coleman's, we're going to start with that one. It says, the sign says, these are hand-drawn illustrations of the signs. The "This is it" was on top, on the base of the arrow, and the bottom of the arrow was underneath, and overlaying the whole thing was a sign that said Coleman's Original Calabash Seafood Restaurant. There was truth to Coleman's quip. In 1940, the restaurant was indeed it, the town's one and only, started by Lucy Coleman, often credited as the creator of Calabash style. Coleman dredged fresh local seafood in evaporated milk and seasoned flour before deep frying it in a vat of lard by the Calabash River, where fishermen unloaded their catch each evening. But Coleman's wasn't it for long. The next sign says Beck's, the original Calabash, and there's another little "This is it" sign, this one slicing through the top left of the sign. Coleman's sister, Ruth Beck, also opened a restaurant in the early 1940s, frying up oysters, spot, flounder, scallops, and hush puppies using the family's recipe. Some claim that Beck's brick and mortar actually preceded Coleman's, but it's perhaps no matter. It was the two together that made it, meaning Calabash-style seafood, a thing. The sisters created a destination for baskets and platters that featured Brunswick County's bounty, as well as a business model that caught on, feeding locals and tourists alike. Now we have Ella's of Calabash, established in 1950, says the sign. Ella's, in 1950, Coleman and Beck's brother and sister-in-law, Lawrence and Ella High, started Ella's of Calabash. Lawrence spent mornings fishing, then joined his family under an oak tree by the restaurant to peel shrimp and prep fish for the day's offerings. According to the family tradition, his catch was also lightly breaded and quickly fried. Overleaf, we have a full-page picture. The caption says, at Dockside Seafood House on the Calabash River, the Price family has been serving up shrimp platters and other classics since 1955. And there's a close-up of a whole plate of the fried shrimp and French fries on top. Here's a sign. It's oval in shape, and there's a dotted line, I guess you'd call it, around it, which gets larger and larger and sweeps into an arrow pointing to the right, Calabash Seafood House. Calabash restaurants continued to proliferate and garner attention over the decades that followed. Word spread of the town's fare, perhaps spurred on by radio host and comedian Jimmy Durante, a Calabash fan, according to local legend, who ended his program each night with the same line, "Good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are." In 1985, the Los Angeles Times reported 20 restaurants for a town of just 180 residents, many of whom worked in the food or fishing industry or both. Now we have Captain Nance's. This one has a picture of a trawler on it and a setting sun in the background. It says, Captain Nance's Calabash Seafood Restaurant. fishing and frying were a way of life for many in town, including Doris and Lennon Nance. Lennon was a shrimp boat captain, and in 1974 he opened Captain Nance's with Doris, who oversaw the restaurant. The business is now run by Doris's children and their spouses, including Calabash's mayor, Donna Long. We buy from a lot of the same people Doris started buying from way back when, Long says. We get our scallops from Holden Beach, oysters from Calabash. Continuity is key to why many folks visit Calabash season after season. There are familiar flavors and familiar faces, as several restaurants have been passed down through families. There's continuity among customers, too. You might have three generations coming to eat at the restaurant, Long says. You become family with them. You really do. Thomas's Seafood Restaurant, they just have a plain sign that says Thomas's Seafood Restaurant, and there's an arrow going from upper right to lower left, but nothing written on it. A Calabash brochure from 1972, a year before the fishing village officially incorporated, invited folks to bring the whole family and prepare to enjoy seafood as you never have before. The pamphlet depicted 8 restaurants, almost all of them housed in strikingly similar single-story buildings with wide parking lots in front. Many have now shuttered, like Calabash Seafood Restaurant, Ivy's High Restaurant, and Thomas's Seafood Restaurant. When Thomas's opened in the mid-1950s, Ronnie and Dahl Scheid fried seafood in lard. But as Dahl told the Brunswick Beacon in 1988, now everyone worries about cholesterol, so we've had to change. And finally, the Calabash Seafood Hut. These days, adaptation also means offering grilled, steamed, blackened, or sautéed seafood in addition to fried. Such shifts have helped sustain business beyond tourists, catering to the tastes of a growing population. Brunswick saw a 27.2% increase between 2010 and 2020. Used to be, you had an off-season, Long says. Now it's all year round. As Corey Bellamy of Beck observes, we have several customers that come in daily 7 days a week. Last week, that added up to 50,000 to 60,000 pounds of shrimp sold at Beck's alone. As for hush puppies, Bellamy can only estimate a lot. They go away pretty quickly. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Bratt, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1971. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call our studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.